Welcome to Science Utah from UPR.
The search for knowledge is in our genes.
Science brings out the best in us.
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
The chimpanzee is actually modifying a natural object to suit it to a specific purpose, thus making it.
We are all time travelers, journeying together into the future.
If we don't stop the destruction of our natural world, the only home any of us will ever know, nothing else will matter.
I'm Niall Clancy. Today we have two stories about the beautiful Bear Lake. First, science reporter Rihanna Gale.
It's 8 a.m. on one of the last days of April, and two officials from the Division of Wildlife Resources are loading up their boat at the Bear Lake State Park Marina. They are joined by two volunteers for today's fisheries sampling, the last one scheduled for the spring. Once everything is loaded and the crew is on board, the boat starts to move to the first of seven gillnet sites set up throughout the lake. The nets are set at depths ranging from 5 to 50 meters. A GPS unit helps Scott Tolentino, fisheries biologist for the Division of Wildlife Resources, navigate to the first of the nets.
We are trying to sample all the species to kind of get a snapshot picture of what the fish populations look like in the lake. Then we'll be taking some of the fish to do some biological samples on them.
Tolentino says the sampling helps inform what is happening in and around the lake, information that is useful for both anglers and researchers.
Earlier this week, we collected fish for mercury testing for the Department of Environmental Quality. And then we also collected some fish for what they call disease testing.
Disease testing is important for preventing contamination of hatcheries that make up a portion of the lake's fish population. Sampling can also help managers monitor the productivity of tributaries and rivers leading into the lake.
The cutthroat trout are stream spawners, and so our natural recruitment for future generations is coming mainly out of the streams. We have one stream in Utah that produces every year, and then we have one that, if we have a high water year like last year, it will produce some fish, and both streams have had a lot of habitat work done on them.
Tolentino says the inclusion of screens on irrigation diversions has positively affected the cutthroat populations.
When I started here 25 years ago, the population of native cutthroat trout was about maybe 10 to 12% native fish, and the rest were stocked fish. And right now we're probably at about 70% native fish and only 30% stocked fish. So we've been able to reduce our stocking numbers out here and still maintain a fishery for the anglers.
As the crew hauls in the nets, some of the fish seem impossibly tangled, but no one seems too concerned or in a hurry. The sun is out, and everyone is working diligently to free the captured fish. The two volunteers on today's outing include Brett Kennedy and Brian McBride, both dedicated hunters here in Utah.
It's a three-year enrollment, and you have to do so many service hours, and you can harvest two deer in 3 years, so it gets you out a lot more into the field.
While they may not be regulars on this fishery project, the two gentlemen are no strangers to the service projects offered by DWR.
Yeah, I usually go help on the Logan River, like shocking the fish.
I've done sage-grouse markers, I've done deer fences for captures.
As the morning progresses and the crew works their way back to shore, we start to see more and more fish in the nets. All are being identified by species and measured for length, but only some are being taken back to the office for further biological sampling.
Just kind of go from there, and then we'll work up through all the bags of trout first. And if we have any of the small whitefish that we collected as part of our sample that we don't know, we'll put those with the net number and the net depth off to the side, and then we have some bags in our freezer that we'll add those to.
This is because of the likeness between the Bear Lake and Bonneville whitefish.
It's because the only way to separate the two different whitefish species when they're below 250 millimeters is to actually count scales along the lateral line, and then we count the number of rows of scales above the lateral line from one side and then back down to the other side.
With all seven sites completed, the crew heads back to shore. There, Tolentino leads the volunteers through a data sheet which details characteristics of fish they've brought in, including sex, maturity, and stomach contents. They also extract the fish's ear bones, which are called otoliths. Otoliths are small, opaque spheres, smaller than a ladybug, that can be analyzed under a microscope to determine the age of a fish. When we get to the whitefish, Tolentino says,
it's important for us to, even though the Bear Lake whitefish is quite small, it's, you know, maximum size is about 10 inches, it's important for us to keep kind of a finger on the pulse of that population to make sure we know what it's doing out there. And, you know, if the numbers started to decline, then we'd have to make some changes on the management of the lake.
Bear Lake is a large and highly used area in northern Utah, meaning it has many different stakeholders. The Utah Division of Wildlife Resources works closely with partners, including researchers from Utah State University and Idaho's Department of Fish and Game, to learn as much as they can about the lake and its inhabitants. Seasonal fishery sampling is one of many studies conducted regularly on Bear Lake. With Utah Public Radio Science News, I'm Rihanna Gale.
To hear more about the work and findings of some of the fish work on Bear Lake, I talked to Haley Glassick.
My name is Haley Glassick. I was a master's student at Utah State University, and I am now a PhD student at Montana State University.
Glassick and her graduate advisor, Jeremy Gaeta, recently published an article in the journal Freshwater Biology about drought in Bear Lake and its effects on some of the unique fishes.
Drought is something that is projected to increase in both frequency as well as duration. And this increase in frequency and duration is especially alarming for the areas of the Intermountain West as well as the world that already are exposed to droughts that naturally happen on the landscape.
Glassick says that the combination of droughts and human uses of water have caused water levels in Bear Lake to fall in the past. By creating a map showing how deep different types of fish habitat are, she was able to determine how much of each habitat would be available at different water levels.
So what we did was went out around Bear Lake and specifically mapped all the regions of cobble, which are very important for the Bear Lake sculpin, as well as regions of sand or vegetation, and then linked those to how deep in the lake they were. So whether they were exposed along the shoreline or 10 to 15 feet deep in the water during our survey period. From that information, we could create this elevation explicit habitat map, and we would be able to say, okay, during 1990, when the lake elevation was, for example, 10 feet below normal, there was less habitat available for the Bear Lake sculpin. This paper specifically, we were looking at Bear Lake sculpin and the cobble that they need in order to spawn and to live as young. We saw that over the past 25 years, drought and more specifically the lake level fluctuations do have an influence on not only the amount of Bear Lake sculpin we're seeing in the lake, but also how many fish are hatching and becoming adults.
Bear Lake sculpin are one of those species unique to the lake, and Glassick says that they're one of the primary prey of Bear Lake Bonneville cutthroat trout, a fish often sought out by anglers.
Our work with the Bear Lake Bonneville cutthroat trout was focusing on tributary connectivity and how long the distances would be for the Bear Lake Bonneville cutthroat trout migrations during drought and non-drought periods.
So not only were droughts negatively impacting the Bear Lake sculpin, Glassick and her colleagues were also concerned that it might be negatively impacting the Bear Lake Bonneville cutthroat trout.
We came to the conclusion that as these lake elevations decline during these drought periods, what happens is these Bonneville cutthroat trout need to expend more energy because they're migrating longer distances to their spawning grounds. And not only are they expending more energy, but they're also more susceptible to predation, largely by American white pelicans.
While her research didn't specifically address it, Glassick says that there is concern that cutthroat trout are getting hit from two sides, having to travel further to spawn and losing sculpin as a critical source of food.
It's important that we understand dynamics of this population so that we can better manage the Bonneville cutthroat trout population in the future as well.
So Glassick says more research is needed, and she acknowledges those people that are doing it right now.
You know, working with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, and specifically Scott Tolentino, who's the Bear Lake biologist, was one of the most valuable relationships that I think both Jeremy and I can speak to during this process. And without his efforts and the efforts from Idaho Fish and Game biologists, this would be a story we're not able to tell. So it's wonderful to have collaborators and, you know, stewards of our natural resources like the biologists at Idaho Fish and Game and Utah Division of Wildlife Resources to help us create the science and help these species persist into the future.
More about Glassik's research can be found at upr.org.
That's one small step for man.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in to UPR's Science Utah. We'll see you next week.
One giant leap for mankind.